are listening to SBS.
Looking to wake up feeling truly rested? Discover the difference of Tempur. Available now at Harvey Norman. Crafted with Tempur material, Tempur mattresses precisely adapt to your body's shape, weight and temperature, helping to relieve pressure and reduce tossing and turning for a more restful night's sleep. Choose from the Tempur Ease collection, the cooling comfort of Tempur Breeze, or experience the ultimate in luxury with the Tempur Pro Lux Adapt, delivering exceptional body-conforming support and premium comfort, exclusive to Harvey Norman. Complete your sleep sanctuary with a Tempur adjustable base, including the Aspire Elite 2.0, Ergo 2.0, Ascend and Leora Rangers, exclusive to Harvey Norman. Enjoy personalized comfort features including head and foot elevation, massage functions, and relaxing zero gravity positioning. Experience sleep that's uniquely yours. Visit your local Harvey Norman store today and experience the Tempur difference. Go!
You're listening to SBS News.
Was the expanded 48-team format worth it? Did VAR actually improve the tournament? And when you look back on this World Cup, what will you remember the most? This. Six weeks, 104 matches, countless unforgettable moments. From incredible underdog stories to spectacular goals, and fierce debate over VAR, hydration breaks, and whether expanding the tournament to 48 teams was the right move. There was plenty to celebrate and plenty to argue about. In today's final podcast, The Wrap, we'll take a look at some of the things that define this World Cup, the football, the controversy and the legacy it leaves behind. So, what went well at this tournament, both on and off the pitch? First, the football itself. New stars emerged alongside established legends, and new names announced themselves on the world stage. There were memorable underdog stories that captured the hearts of fans and the global stage. And the expanded tournament also gave smaller football nations like Cape Verde on edge of their seats. Late winners, last gaps equalizers, penalty shootouts. And of course, Spain lifting the World Cup.
In 2026, the champions of the world...
Spain's World Cup winning side returned home to Madrid to celebrate with an estimated crowd of almost 2 million people. The players and their coaching staff met with the country's royals and Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez to believe she was seeing the star players in real life.
Seeing the bus was amazing. Many times I thought the players weren't real, as if it was fiction on the other side of the screen. Seeing them bringing another World Cup, such a united team, it was spectacular.
But as memorable as the football was, this came after the suspension of United States striker Follerin Balogun's red card. A decision UEFA says crossed a red line after US President Donald Trump had urged FIFA President Gianni Infantino to review the incident. Now the relationship between FIFA and UEFA became increasingly strained throughout the tournament. One cause was FIFA's unexplained decision to suspend Balogun's red card right before the US's game against Belgium. There were also concerns over the treatment of Iran's national team, denying the entry of Somali referee Omar Artan to the US, and criticism of hydration breaks. Now, even before the tournament began, UEFA President Alexander Seferin, who boycotted the World Cup final, questioned whether expanding to 48 teams would improve the competition. So, how successful was this World Cup from an officiating perspective? And did VAR actually do what it was designed to do? I spoke to former FIFA World Cup referee Christina Ankel about this.
Everyone's requesting consistency and just knowing what to expect from an official. So I think collectively, in the beginning stages, the group stages, the round of 32, there was consistency in what you were expecting from the officials, which is not making many recommendations from VAR down to the official. It started to change slightly in the round of 16. You could see some recommendations that were not being made earlier were starting to be recommended down. And I think that's just it's a little bit of a mix of it becomes more pressure packed, right? You get a little bit more, you know, anxious in that referee room or the VAR room. At the same time, there's, you know, while the tournament goes on and after 3-4 weeks have played on. Sometimes the education and the insight from one's referee instructors, you know, what they are seeing that they like in the game versus what they haven't liked in the game the first 2-3 years can kind of change a little bit of that.
Christina says one of the clearest trends throughout the tournament was referees calling fewer minor fouls.
I would say one of the most consistent things the officials have done this entire tournament is to not call simple fouls. So where many people were kind of a little bit surprised, but once again, if they're going to expect like these simple fouls not to be called, is that you saw officials allow a lot of normal contact in the middle of the field or a lot of contact in the middle of the field happen without, you know, maybe a couple of misconducts were not given in the sense of yellow cards. But you didn't see that consistently. That was the most consistent they did, was not calling some of those fouls. And that's what allowed the games appear to seem like they flowed more.
Officiating wasn't only under pressure on the field.
Probably the biggest spike I've seen in, you know, social media and the media on different narratives regarding the tournament and FIFA itself. And to be quite honest, a bit of attacks on referees in this tournament from effectively their neutral perspective. I think the officials did a good job of handling quite a bit of that energy that was drawn in their direction that respectfully, like, they can't defend themselves against. So I feel like they've remained consistent, and the biggest talking points, and there will always be talking points in any game, in any tournament, is about maybe a major decision that wasn't handled correctly. But, you know, we probably have less than 10 of that after we've had 6 weeks of football. And we've had, right, 104 games. So at the end of the day, I can imagine the percentages are very, very low of what we're talking about in the collective decisions given and not given.
Christina believes VAR generally achieved what it was meant to do.
I think some of the recommendations of where, you know, VAR has worked exactly how people expected it to work. I can think of one right just off the top of my head is a penalty given in the England match. Essentially, it was a penalty given for Spence for contact. And then when you see the reverse camera angle that the referee would never have just based upon, you know, geography and just how the football would go, it showed very clearly that Spence basically extended his body horizontally or laterally to initiate that contact. So it was a proper recommendation for VAR. It was very quick, and it overturned, or the referee took the recommendation and overturned his initial decision of a penalty situation. So that's a really good, probably the latest succinct demonstration of how VAR was pretty effectful. And you could see football pundits, those ex-footballers who've played before, who were saying, yeah, we agree, that one should not have been given.
But she says the Balogun red card controversy will likely have the biggest long-term impact on how FIFA reviews the system before the next World Cup.
It would have been seen as still an incorrect decision if all of the extra after effects that happened in the red card by VAR's recommendation for a red card to Balogun for that contact. You still would have had a lot of energy associated with that. You just wouldn't have seen the kind of the storm that occurred after, right? There's a unilateral decision by one individual under Article 27. So that will be probably the most talked about decision and will have some systemic impact and effect for those who continue to, you know, do improvements every 4 years, right, and continue to champion it.
Another heated discussion came after Egypt's loss to Argentina, many fans accusing officials of favouring the Latin American side.
I mean, the Egypt-Argentina was what I would call is a perfect storm, where there was so many things happening, right? It was on the heels of the Balogun situation, right? It's on the heels of sentiments that people had even before the tournament started that Argentina is historically, you know, benefiting from these decisions and these calls. So you're going into that tournament, honestly, even as a referee, knowing that like everyone's looking for something. They're trying to find anything that could potentially be, you know, used for an argument will be used for an argument. So, and this is where I say like some the nuance of officiating subjective decisions is incredibly important to understand. And it's very easy to paint broad brushstrokes versus looking at the details. And what I mean by that is Egypt's right was up 2-0. They score 2-0, 1-0, but they score that goal that gets taken back because of the foul in the change of transition in the beginning of the attacking phase of play, because the root of the foul happened on the top of the boot.
Now, Christina tells me when the incidents are analysed individually, the decisions followed the laws of the game, even if the public perception had already moved in another direction.
So the Mo Salah situation, if you really take a look at it and come in it with very, okay, let's analyze the two different clips. You see in the Mo Salah plays that the first initial contact is on the ball. It's between him. Mo's already starting to fall over. Yes, there's a bit of contact on the foot, but it's not the original contact that creates the foul, right? It's not something that actually is a foul in and of itself. and not something that VAR get involved in versus when Egypt's goal was taken away. There is no contact on the ball. It's completely on the foot, and it is the reason why the person falls, right? So those are nuances, but those are things that aren't going to be I'm going to use the word appreciated, but those are things that are not going to be appreciated, particularly if someone has a preconceived perspective and a narrative and an argument.
The football may have won many people over, but debate around the expanded format is already shifting. FIFA President Gianni Infantino says a proposal to expand again is expected to be discussed after the tournament. Christina Uncle believes it's simply too early. She says FIFA should first assess how the 48-team format performs over another tournament cycle.
This tournament was a good example of where I was okay with it expanding for this tournament. I know there was a lot of loud voices who were not okay before the tournament started that it had been expanded. And to your point, had changed their mind throughout when you have the Cape Verdes of the world, right? When you see a lot of these new first-time debutantes, you know, really, you know, competing.
She also argues qualifying is only one part of the equation. For another perspective, my colleague Miles Prowse spoke with sports studies expert Dr. Steve Georgiakis from the University of Sydney. He believes the biggest success of this tournament was inclusion, but he doesn't think the World Cup should get any bigger.
You don't want to cheapen the qualification into the World Cup. It's still quite rigorous. Have a look at teams such as Italy not making it. You don't want to make it too easy.
And what will he remember? The controversies. Balogun's red card and Donald Trump's appearance during Spain's trophy celebrations. The treatment of Iran's national team and the ongoing debate over VAR. But despite the criticism, he says technology has improved football overall. Closer to home, Dr. Georgiakis believes Australia left this tournament wondering what might have been. He says changing goalkeepers proved costly and the Socceroos had a genuine opportunity to go much deeper.
The decision by Tony Popovich to change goalkeepers was a costly mistake. We had an opportunity through fate, I think, to get through the Egyptians and then take on the Argentinians. And I really, you know, thought we would be a chance against the Argentinians. There was just something about this team, a very solid goalkeeper, a very, very solid defence, a very hard-running midfield, and then a couple of strikers there who perhaps could have scored these goals, which could have got us a little further into the tournament.
More importantly, he says Australian football now needs to answer to a much bigger question. What is its football identity? He says Spain developed one over decades and says Australia now needs to do the same.
What has to change is clearly we're at that point where we need to make a decision as a country and as a football nation, what is our philosophy? We currently don't have a philosophy. Spain, the winners of the World Cup, have a philosophy. They adopted this philosophy 30 years ago and they persevered with that philosophy. And that philosophy now is bringing them so much international success. So we as a nation have to reflect on what are our strengths as a sporting nation and what do we need to do at the junior development level to make sure we have some kind of a system which will be able to produce national teams which compete well at the very, very top level.
So every World Cup leaves a legacy. This one will be remembered for brilliant football, key ways. But still, the game produced moments that reminded us why the World Cup remains unlike any other sporting event. And as a final note, I want to express my gratitude and say a huge thank you to you, to my colleagues, my family and friends who have supported the World Cup Daily, the 90 Plus podcast. It's been a great ride and I'm extremely grateful.
Thank you. Looking to wake up feeling truly rested? Discover the difference of Tempur. Available now at Harvey Norman. Crafted with Tempur material, Tempur mattresses precisely adapt to your body's shape, weight and temperature, helping to relieve pressure and reduce tossing and turning for a more restful night's sleep. Choose from the Tempur Ease collection, the cooling comfort of Tempur Breeze, or experience the ultimate in luxury with the Tempur Pro Lux Adapt, delivering exceptional body-conforming support and premium comfort, exclusive to Harvey Norman. Complete your sleep sanctuary with a Tempur-adjustable base, including the Aspire Elite 2.0, Ergo 2.0, Ascend and Leora ranges, exclusive to Harvey Norman. Enjoy personalized comfort features including head and foot elevation, massage functions, and relaxing zero-gravity positioning. Experience sleep that's uniquely yours. Visit your local Harvey Norman store today and experience the Tempur difference.